Welcome to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, it's Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. This episode is brought to you by Carol L. Campos Coaching. Why coach with me when there are so many coaches out there? I do things differently. I don't jump right into your goal. Why? Well, what I've learned is that the subconscious mind is running 90% of the show. That's where we start. We clear any emotional blocks and limiting beliefs first, making sure you know your why and are aligned with where you're headed before tackling your goal. Whether you want to change careers or simply want more joy in your life, I can teach you strategies to help you gain the clarity needed to go where your heart is calling. To get started, I invite you to sign up for a free discovery session at carollcampos.com. Together, let's light your path. Hi, everyone. This is Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back to The Divine Breadcrumb.
Today we have Dr. Michael Lennox, a world-renowned dream expert, interpreting thousands of dreams through his workshops, media, and one-on-one sessions with both private and corporate clients. He is also a sought-after astrologer and intuitive. And what I love about Michael, aside from his amazing energy, is his generosity. He pumps out free content like nobody's business in the form of videos, emails, every day. And Deb and I have learned so much from being a part of his community. Dr. Lennox is the author of Dream Sight, Llewellyn's Little Book of Dreams, and Llewellyn's Complete Book of Dreams, all which help people understand their dreams, helping them to navigate the symbolism and universal meanings. What's also interesting is that Dr. Lennox has a PhD in psychology. So this interesting dichotomy between his intuitive gifts and his formal Western education give him a unique perspective, making what he has to say quite fascinating. So today we're going to talk a little bit about some of the common themes in dreams and even have Dr. Lennox interpret some of the dreams submitted by our listeners. So with that, let's get to it. Welcome, Dr. Michael Lennox. We're so honored to have you here with us.
Oh, it's delightful to be here. Thank you.
Yes, we're very excited. Dreams has been something that Carol and I, we talk about them weekly.
Yes.
We compare dreams and chat about them and ponder them. And so it's great to have an actual expert to bounce ideas off of today.
Yay, delighted. Yay, let's have at it.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So before we dive in, tell us a little bit about young Michael. Were you intuitive as a child, or when did this passion for dream interpretation surface?
Well, I definitely was an intuitive kid being raised in an empirical household. So my intuitive perspective was not nurtured at all, which ultimately turned out to be the best thing that ever could have happened, because it was through that, you know, friction of feeling one way inside my little intuitive sensitive self and rubbing up against a world that said no to that was actually what helped facilitate my ability to just dive in deeper as an adult.
Yeah, right.
I have no objection about that, but it was in my childhood that I got interested in dreams, mostly just because I had them and I loved them. And it was one aspect of my inner life that my mom was very interested in hearing me share about. Just as you and Carol, you two share dreams with each other, me sharing my dreams with my mother really got the interest in what was happening in my nighttime phenomenon to be very prominent. That it was later that I figured out that you could interpret dreams courtesy of Freud. His book, seminal book, showed up on my mother's bookshelf because she was getting her MSW, Master's in Social Work, and later a doctorate in social work. And that's what did it for me. It was reading that at 15 where I was like, oh, this really is something revealing, these little dream stories. And then I just started practicing with my teenage friends in high school. They would say, I had a dream. I'd say, well, tell me about it. We'll talk about it. I found that I had intuitive perspective that landed.
Yeah.
That's really a cool thing, especially when you're a teenager, to have everybody, like, you know, probably all around you trying to get their dreams analyzed.
Well, now you're speaking into my narcissism, which is how it worked, guys. No doubt about it. Just the idea of being out and about socially and having something come out of me that caused other people to pay attention, to say that's interesting, was captivating to my little wounded self that wanted more attention than was probably available in any room that I was in.
Well, right. I think that, you know, anything that is sort of mystical and, and sort of on the other side, you know, those kinds of gifts or talents, I think, you know, one of two things: either the individual with the gifts keeps them hidden because they don't know quite what to do with it, or you take that out into the world and it garners some attention.
People absolutely are drawn to that and they are attracted by it. And what I discovered as an adult with, you know, as a person who was diving into these gifts and now using them and understanding them, what was happening as a teenager for me was that I was responding to the idea of universal meaning, that the meaning of a symbol wasn't something that was assigned by somebody randomly. It was built into what the thing was, what it did, what's its use, what's its essence. So if my keys are how I get into territory that is otherwise locked off to me, that's what we use our house keys for, right? We open the door. So then he becomes a symbol of my capacity to challenge mysteries or to make something, you know, available to me, right? So the meaning of the symbol is built into what it does. And I just had an organic, intuitive alignment with that thinking that was that enabled me to speak into people's dreams as a teenager without any kind of formal training. And it was that universal meaning consciousness that led me to understand symbols even greater.
Wow. So I've heard you say that there is really no wrong way to do dream work. And in your book, Dream Sight, you discuss a three-part process that helps people decipher their dreams. Can you expand on this for our listeners?
Absolutely. So let's start with the idea that there's no wrong way. I mean, dreams are a mystery at the end of the day, and they belong to you. They're yours. Yes. They're intimate. They're private. So from that perspective, the idea of coming from the outside and interfering with that process is looked down upon greatly in the psychological community. But meanwhile, I have a gift and no one can take that away from me. So I had to find a way to codify what I was doing when I was hearing a dream and give a platform for people to do the same thing. So I created this sort of ocular image, this idea that there's a universal landscape associated with any meaning. I kind of did that with the keys. You know, a glass of water, for example, is the idea that I need water to live, and then the glass becomes the symbol of bringing that towards me, the ability to get the water I need to bring, you know, the elixir of life. So then that's the universal meaning. That thing that everybody would agree. Everybody would agree on the planet that a glass of water is about drawing that to you.
Yes.
So then you've got the secondary piece of it, which would be, well, what's your personal association with the meaning? You know, meaning, like if the dream is about snakes and snakes represent change and transformation because of the way that snakes shed their skin and when they it's all in one fell swoop. So snakes become this beautiful symbol of those kinds of changes that happen in one fell swoop. But the personal focus now that you have to add to the dream interpretation, do you find snakes terrifying? Or maybe you, one of the people, find them alluring. The snake still means change is happening, but the association to snakes might shift the interpretation of the dream from some change that you're afraid of or some change that maybe you're intrigued by. And then, of course, the middle of the sandwich is, well, what's happening in the dream? Is the snake, you know, sitting there in the road, and is it passive? Is it something you have to consider? Or maybe it's attacking you and the changes in your life that the dream is representing are pummeling on top of you. this way of considering first the universal, then the context of the dream, and then adding the personal is something that anyone can do by taking a dream that they've had, grabbing the symbol that maybe is confounding them, and do that three-step process. What's universal, what's in the dream, and what do I personally feel about the thing itself?
Hmm. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, I love this because Deb and I were talking earlier this week about the fact that, yes, so let's just use your example of the snake. For me, that might mean one thing. For somebody else, it might mean something totally different. So I love that part of the analyzation process is your personal association that has to be mixed in.
Right. And what the universal does is takes away from being overly focused on the personal. So if you are terrified of snakes and you wake up from that dream and all you can think of is, oh my God, snakes, awful, snakes, terrible, terrible, dream about snakes, you're going to miss the little piece of wisdom that your soul is trying to communicate to you, which is pay attention to the thing that's changing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So do you feel that every dream has meaning? Or sometimes is a dream just a dream?
Well, that's the joke, my answer to that is only if you want to interpret it. So yes, every dream has meaning because they are expressions of our unconscious. And the unconscious can only be understood by interpretation. It's unconscious. It's not available to us in conscious awareness. So that every time you dream, you're opening the window between your conscious awareness and your unconscious mind. That's happening every night with every dream. Now, does that mean you want to interpret every dream that comes? You'd be very busy doing
that. Right.
Yeah. You know, and that would wind up being solipsistic and probably not as valuable.
Right.
In the long run. I will say this, that when someone is first in opening up their dream life to consideration, maybe because they've gotten their dream journal and they've started to write the dreams down, I would encourage that person to look at every dream, every dream, every dream, no matter what comes up. If it grabs your attention, dance with it. What I have found of doing this for a lifetime is that now I'm in a place where if a dream comes that needs my attention, I will know it. It will feel that important to me.
So I
would encourage anybody who's just opening the Pandora's box to just play with everything that grabs their attention.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I know you know Michael Sandler. Michael was my coach and has been my mentor for a while. And one of the things he used to do when coaching me is, I'd be telling him about my week. And if a dream came up, he would pull out one of your books. He had me keep a dream journal and to kind of look at common themes that were happening in the dreams. And it's fascinating.
Well, yes, the unconscious will grab onto a vocabulary and start pummeling you with similar images and similar themes. And one of the things that I often will suggest to somebody who is having a recurring experience that maybe they don't like or isn't so comfortable is that if you are passive about what your unconscious is trying to communicate to you, it will simply come up in a repeated theme and a repeated theme, like, someone knocking at your door until you turn around and answer it.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Pay attention. I've always joked I'm kind of a brick to the head kind of person. So I probably need multiple dreams with the same symbols.
Yeah.
I love it.
So let's talk a little bit about nightmare, because I know a lot of people are curious about that. Do nightmares serve a purpose? Are they helping us to process something?
At the end of the day, I always answer these questions in a similar way to start, which is always to say, I don't know. How would I know? I'm just another bozo on the bus having. But what I do know is that the process of learning who you are and self-investigation, in the most intense way possible, the nightmare experiences absolutely get our attention. And so I don't know if there's purpose or cause behind that. I don't know if the unconscious sitting down there going, hey, how am I going to get Michael to pay attention? Oh, I think I'll give him a scary dream. But that's the fantasy. That's the fantasy I have is that nightmares are our unconscious mind's way of telling us to pay attention. Now, is that true? How could I know? But I have spent a lifetime of self-investigation that has worked in terms of making, you know, a life that was a better life because I knew myself more deeply and more intimately. And responding to nightmare attention-getting moments was absolutely a part of that process and valuable. So my inclination is to answer that the first thing about nightmares to know is that if it scares you into your waking life, that it probably wants your waking life attention.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense. And, you know, and typically I've only had one recurring dream in my life, you know, but it was for a period of a few weeks and it was a horrible, horrific nightmare. And I don't know what the message was it was trying to bring to me, but it eventually went away. So clearly I addressed it.
Right. And that's another thing back to the idea of, does every dream need to be addressed? Believe me, your psyche is addressing every dream.
Right. Right.
So sometimes the psyche, again, I don't know how this mechanism works or even if this is accurate. What it feels like to me is that there are moments when a greater consciousness or a greater intelligence that is part of who we are lets us know that something is important enough to grapple with our unconscious and our conscious mind in a fight or in a conversation or in a struggle. The very fact that that recurring set of dreams came up for a couple of weeks and then diminished tells us ipso facto that the passage was successful.
Right.
You know yourself better as a result, even if you can't go back to the dream experience and say, ah, yes, I learned this or I learned that. Just right. The process of moving through life is instructive and growth oriented. And those recurring dream moments are part of the process. And yeah, I do think that when we dance with those dreams, we deepen the experience, we deepen the process. One of the things that happens with me in dream work is that if you hear me do it or you work with me, you might get convinced that the only way to successfully do dream work is to have an interpretation and an aha and a, oh, wow, that's what this means, which is what I do. Now, I don't want you out there or any of the people listening to feel like that's the only way to say I've done the dream work correctly.
Right.
Sometimes it's just like there's huge swaths of dream work that people teach out there that is absolutely the antithesis of looking for an interpretation. It's just dance with it, be in it, think about it, ruminate. I work the way I work. There's a part of my mind that wants to have an answer. And so I work in that direction, but I'm not attached to it. I don't have to have that experience in order to feel satisfied. I'm comfortable with being in the mystery. Teaching other people how to be comfortable in the mystery is not always so easy.
Very true. Very true. So in other interviews, you've said that when dreaming, the part of the brain that recognizes self, space, and time is asleep.
Yes.
How would this relate or be similar in any way to Alzheimer's patients while they're awake? Because their recognition of self, time, and space doesn't exist. Or maybe while under hypnosis or in a meditative state. Is this sort of the same thing?
Wow. My God.
What a question.
we had to find something new to ask.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Right. Well, here's my first answer. It may not be directly scientifically addressing your question, but I did once have a rather amazing life experience with an older couple that lived across the street from where I was living at the time. They were aged in their 80s, and the husband had a pretty advanced case of Alzheimer's. And through some circumstances, I wound up being hired by the family to go across the street once or twice a week to spend some time with this man. And as I said, it was very advanced Alzheimer's. And what I learned to do in those interactions, quite just intuitively on my own was, as he would speak to me, I grabbed bits and pieces of his conversation and I would respond as if it was almost dream work.
Mm.
He, as a man with Alzheimer's in his 80s, he was stuck a little bit back in time, as many Alzheimer's patients do. They go back in time. And one of his conflicts was a lawsuit that had happened clearly many decades earlier. Mm-hmm. So he would talk about this, but it made no sense, right?
Right.
But I didn't respond to him in sensical language. He would mm-hmm. say something that made it clear he thought he was back in a courtroom and maybe I was the judge.
Right.
Now, I could have argued with him and said, nope, I'm Michael from across the street, increasing his agitation. But I responded as if he was sharing a dream with me.
Mm.
And I would be like, ah, yes, judges, you know, they partition life into right and wrong. And, you know, he just responded in symbolic language.
Interesting.
He would calm down.
Mm.
So he was having, so here's what I then assess. I don't, again, can't know if this is true or accurate, but in the experience of his Alzheimer's mind that was diminishing his capacity to know his orientation to time, space, and identity in the present moment, was in like a dream of his past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I met him at the dream content, he got relaxed. If I did what his wife was doing, which was arguing against where he was in his dream state, he would get agitated.
Mm-hmm.
So what it taught me something about the inner recesses of where he was in his mind, in his memory, was more three-dimensional in the way that dreams are, and less linear in the way that waking life typically is.
Mm-hmm. That's my mother has severe Alzheimer's, and that's been my experience with her as well.
Beautiful, and right. So if you respond to something she says with a recognizable language that tells her that you're getting her,
yes,
energetically, shape-wise, or thematically, then she'll be relaxed. If you argue against her and say, yeah, mom, you're out of your mind, and that ain't happening.
Well, the other interesting piece has been, because as you said, they go way, way back. So in these awake or living dreams that she's having, they're about her family when she was young. So I'm hearing stories about her family that I never knew.
Oh, wow. What a gift that is.
Yes, exactly. Because the memory of that now is clear for her, whereas when I was a child, even those memories weren't super clear for her because she was consumed with the current space and time.
Right.
So these
little
tiny details of her childhood she had forgotten. So now I'm getting some of that, and it's been pretty interesting.
So somewhere in this is the distinction between cognition that is linear and mm-hmm. cognition that is multidimensional. We call that left brain, right brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think there's more to it than we know.
Yes.
But even in that mystery of what we don't know, certainly there is some connection between how someone with dementia or Alzheimer's or Lewy body, where they are captivated by an aspect of mind that's not in the room in present time and in present moment, is not dissimilar from dreaming.
Mm. Excellent. Thank you so much. So, Carol, did we want to jump into some dream interpretation, Carol?
Yeah, Michael, are you up for that?
I am. Let's do it.
Okay, so cool. So just to let you know, I reached out to my social network just to let people know that you were going to be on our show. And let me tell you, my post was trending.
Yes.
And so, which is really cool because, you know, LinkedIn can be pretty conservative and, you know, 5 million people, it's trending. So apparently this is a big topic.
It's a big topic.
So what's interesting is one of the subjects that comes up a lot in dreams for both Deb and myself is surrounding homes or houses. And what I found is in a lot of the comments, a lot of people wanted to know about this as well. A woman named Leslie, give her a shout out, a woman named Natasha. So I tried to kind of glom it all together. So just bear with me.
Yes.
Because this seems like it's a big one for people. So I myself have dreamt of homes that are incomplete or falling apart, or homes that have trees and animals living in certain rooms. Or sometimes I'm not supposed to be in a particular house and I'm sneaking around trying not to get caught. Or sometimes I think the house is mine, but there's a common area that ends up belonging to someone else. And let's see. So Leslie was asking, Natasha was asking about homes as well. And I think I covered, she and Margaret had one where a hidden passageway in a house she lived in for 18 years leads to a whole new living space, mm-hmm. but with 60s and 70s style decor, and she gets a bad feeling. And I think you had said universal landscape of the house is self. So could you go into what some of the other details might mean?
Absolutely. I think this is a wonderful, simple to focus on in terms of, you know, just being a valuable podcast episode for you guys, because mm-hmm. it is very, very common. And we do want to start with houses and homes as a symbol of self. And mm-hmm. the self is in transit throughout life. Like we, arguably, there's certainly research that says we don't really change that much from beginning of life to end of life. But from our perspective, that change can be utter and complete and magnificent throughout life. We can change our sense of self dramatically. So if a home in a dream is incomplete or falling apart, then that's a moment when you're in consideration of what aspects of self are not working, what's falling apart, what needs my attention so that I can have a stronger, more, I don't know, integrous, that's not really a word, but it ought to be, sense of self. I love the animals in dreams because animal medicine has energy for us. Animals are about our instincts. And so we ascribe certain medicines to different animals. And again, back to my perspective of how those universal meanings are created is, what's the animal's quality? What do they exhibit? You know, so an elephant mm-hmm. in your room is going to be different than a deer, mm-hmm. right? So you get to consider what's the energy, instinctive energy that the animal represents. And then you can even go to the room that the animal is in, because you said animals in certain rooms, you know, the kitchen is the heart and the home mm-hmm. where, you know, mm-hmm. everything is warmed and fed. You know, the mm-hmm. living room is your public space. The bedroom is what you only do in private. And your pure individuated, I am my most private self is the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a dream with an animal in a room, now you've got two different layers of consideration. What part of self based on the room and what instinct is being offered to me? Mm. I love the sneaking around as if the home isn't your own.
Oh, I have it all the time. All the time.
This I think good. That's about getting bigger and more powerful in your consciousness, but the psyche representing that you're not quite ready to step uh-huh. into the bigness or the power or the growth that you're up to, which is natural. Like we grow, but we're not quite ready. And then we get confronted with life and we step into the bigger spaces. The dream of I don't quite feel deserving of this house or this is, you know, not mine is reflecting some need to push yourself into a little bit more authentic expression.
Okay. Mm.
You know, the common area being shared by others is probably about boundaries.
Mm. Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah. Right? And I love the hidden recesses and the hidden resources dreams. This is a very common dream where suddenly the house is yours as you know it. And then you find this passageway or this mm-hmm. hidden room or this great sense of abundance you didn't know was there. That's also an esteem kind of dream. That's a dream of recognizing, oh my God, I'm bigger than I thought. I have more resource than I thought. I have more abundance and prosperity operating inside my consciousness than I knew about.
So, I love that.
But in Margaret's case, she's saying she finds this whole new living space, but it's kind of old style decor and she's getting a bad feeling. So would
well,
it have
that's just because she needs to redecorate.
I'm picturing a Brady Bunch house.
What I like about, like, if I were engaged with her and talking about this dream, one of the first questions I would ask, I would try to get that dreamer to identify exactly when in time, you know, that decor mm-hmm. was peaking, and then translate that age to her, to the conversation.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Like if it's 60s or 70s decor, I was like, how old are you now? And how old are you with then? And is there some connection to the bad feeling that harkens back to that era of your life when you were in that era? That would just be my first one. Like, there's a number of ways that we might go to get the dream conversation to feel vibrant for the dreamer, but that would be my first.
Yeah, that makes sense. So this is interesting. I mean, and this is kind of dovetailing the whole house thing. Both Deb and I have had a dream where we're in a house, but in the basement of the house is an old like diner that hasn't been used in years. And I thought I was the only one who's had this crazy dream, but she's had it as well.
I've actually had another one where there's an operational like train station in the basement of a house that's like running, and there's trains and people and crowds. And I mean, it's crazy.
Well, this is perfect. First of all, the basement is where we hide everything we're afraid of.
Okay.
That's the shadow. So in Jungian psychology, the shadow is actually an archetype. So like the lover is the archetype of passion. The warrior is the archetype of, you know, what's the difference between right and wrong. And the shadow is the archetype of everything about us we wish weren't true. Everything about us that we hide from ourselves and the world. Mm. Basement.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what feeds us, kids.
Mm.
We are fed when we go into the basement and we sit with our shadow and we negotiate with it. Hmm. This is what all growth comes from, facing the demon that would inhibit our growth.
Hmm. Oh, I love that.
So yes. You're dreaming about the power of going into the hidden recesses and doing some investigation. It's like going to a diner. You're going to be fed. And then in case of the other dream, it's like, not only can you be fed by going and doing the shadow work, you can then move out into the world in any direction that you want to by virtue of having done that self-investigative work. And that's showing up as the train station.
I love that. Excellent.
Yay.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. And I think our listeners will really enjoy this, because it really is such a common one. Even I was talking with my mom yesterday, letting her know we were going to be talking with her, and she said the same thing. She's like, ask about homes.
Yeah.
Well, one that I hear a lot from friends and online and things is the issue of you're somewhere in public and you need to use a bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you either can't find one, or you find one and it's still not private, or it's filthy and you don't want to use it, or there's some challenge or hindrance and you can't find anywhere to use a bathroom.
Yes. Very common as well. Mm. So think about, in the Western world, what a bathroom means to a child. There's all of this emphasis around potty training at a certain age, where there's the very important directive of, you can do that business, but do it here.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then for a child that moves past that stage and is successful? First, there's usually a celebration, right?
Right.
What's in the toilet?
Right, right.
Like, I remember visiting,
so
visiting my friend Emily. She's got two kids. The older one's about 3. And when he was about 2.5, well, he's like 4 or 5 now, but when he's like 2.5, 3 years old, it's like, I came over for a visit. He's like, come in. And the 3 of us went into the bathroom, and, you know, he's like, here. And there was his poop.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
He wouldn't let mommy flush the toilet until Michael. Like, he wanted to show me his poop that badly. Mm. And the next morning, I was tempted to send Emily a text of my morning poop, but I didn't. Like, here, share this with James. I didn't do that. But I mean, I'm being funny, but guess what this child and any child in the Western world is able to do once this interesting moment is over? They close the door.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly we have a room in the house that represents, so this is interesting, we're going to bathroom dreams. This correlates to house dreams. What's the meaning of the bathroom in a house? It's our most intimate self-to-self room in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where we sit with our shame.
Hmm. Okay.
Think about that poop and that creative act that this boy was so excited about. He made that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in my house, we called it make.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's what we called it. Poop was made.
I remember a lot of my friends growing up. That's what it was called.
I made that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a creative act. So let's go symbolically. We're not talking about people pooping now. We're talking about the symbolism of I take stuff in, mm-hmm. and then I make this comes out, and it's evidence that it's all functioning.
Mm-hmm.
But it smells.
Yes.
But it doesn't smell bad to us, mind you.
Mm.
It smells bad to others, and we are terribly ashamed of that. So in symbolic land, poop and poopy smell and that which we would like to hide from others is that built-in sense of, I'm ashamed of my humanity.
Hmm.
Everybody poops.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? But we want to hide it. And women, my God, women, you don't even fart in public.
It's so true.
Right. Okay. So pooping and bathrooms become the most profound symbol of individuated sense of self. I know who I am. I'm willing to sit in my private spaces with all of me, including that which I'm ashamed of. And when we're out in public in a dream state and we're compelled to find our central individuated place where we can be private and okay with our shame, that becomes a really profound symbol of integration. I'm seeking to integrate my public self and my most private, shameful self.
Hmm.
And it shows up in the dream narrative of I can't find the place within my psyche where I'm comfortable with my most private, shameful parts.
Wow.
How do I navigate the world publicly when part of me needs to go someplace to be with my shame?
Right.
So that dream becomes a common expression of the sort of dissonance, cognitive dissonance of my public self that doesn't fart and doesn't poop. And the part of me that if you came near while I was doing that, I'd be horrified.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh my gosh, that's fascinating.
Yes.
And again, so many people had questions about the whole bathroom thing.
Yep. It's such a common dream. So that dreamer, so for all of you listening, don't have to be in consideration with the very specific, you know, I turned left and I turned right and I looked at the bathroom here. There's information in that. And that's a value too. And I would encourage anybody to write and ruminate and write about the images that come up in the dream. But the very sort of singular thought to be considering if you wake up from a bathroom dream is, how am I feeling about my private, individuated, integrated self?
Mm.
What is not sort of supporting my feeling that way in my waking life? The dream is going to be a signal to you that something needs your attention.
Mm. Excellent. Makes sense.
Yay.
Carol, did you have one more?
The last one that seemed to be really common having to do with vehicles. Either you're in the back seat of the vehicle and it's going on its own and you don't even have your hands on the steering wheel, or you're driving up a steep hill and the car begins to roll backwards. Those were a couple of the things that came up.
Yes, also very common dream because we are a culture that moves about in our cars.
Mm-hmm.
So cars represent on the symbolic level your social structures, you're moving about your community. Not the private sense of self that the house represents, but the how you move about in your world consciousness is going to be represented by anything that shows up in a car dream. And so what's the thing that everybody wants that no one can ever have, but they think they can have, so they run around pretending that they do? Control.
Right.
It's a complete and utter illusion. But we strive for it. We go for it, right? It's important to us to feel like we're in control. And so driving is about control. Backseat is about not being in control. And so there are all sorts of iterations of that, which is either you're in the backseat or you can or you can't. I've had this dream a zillion different ways where half my body's in the backseat. And I,
yeah.
Anytime you wake up from that dream, it's like, how am I feeling like I wish I could control this or that and can't?
Okay, so there you go, Leslie. Shout out to Leslie. That's what that's about.
The steep hill one is not out of the same territory. It's still about a kind of sense of control, but it's more about the journey itself, with the choices that you made at a certain point that led you on a particular road, an effort that you're attempting, getting to the sort of peak of ineffectiveness.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
That dream is about, I cannot traverse this hill.
Interesting.
Yeah. But the only thing I would invite anybody to think of when you wake up is to add the word yet.
Right.
Yes.
The dream is saying no. The dream is saying not this way or not that route.
Interesting. I have something similar. It's not a hill. It's usually a bridge. But it's a hill of a bridge. Like, it's steep, like almost straight up. And for whatever reason, traffic is stopped, and I don't know how I'm going to keep the car from rolling backwards, stuck in this traffic on this, you know, vertical bridge.
What I love about that is a very specific distinction of this dream that we're talking about, where it comes when you are actually up to something specific about changing your life. Bridges are the symbol of consciousness that I'm in, land, crossing over something to get to another piece of land, another piece of consciousness. So the bridge becomes the symbol of we're changing directions, we're changing consciousness, we're doing some shift and change. Whereas the hill isn't necessarily about something you've intended, but something that you're experiencing, like the world pushing back on you in a general way. Whereas your dream with the bridge, if that's coming up, then you've got to be in some kind of effort to change something in your life or build something. Maybe it's a project or a new direction or some different state that you're wishing to get yourself into that's represented by the bridge. And then the dream is saying, it's not happening right now in the way that you wish.
Okay.
I also have one very often where my car has issues and it's brand new and I'm, you know, all nervous trying to find somebody to fix it. And I don't have the money to fix it, or I'm nervous about being able to pay for it.
Yeah, that just strikes me as lacking confidence about your power and abilities. Like, there's nothing in the description that you just used. Like, I'm listening to your language. And if you listen back to the language you just used, there was nothing in your language that said the car is broken.
Interesting.
It's kind of a fear that the car is broken, or sense that the car can't meet its brand new, you know, abilities.
Right. Okay, that's good. So
there's a distinction, you know, the language is important. Like, it's important that a dream of I've got a new car and I can't quite get it to work, or I don't think it's going to work, is very different than I have a brand new car and it was killed in a boating accident.
That's great. Thank you.
So, Michael, how can our listeners that maybe this is new to, or they want to investigate all of this further, how can they do better at remembering their dreams when they wake up?
First and foremost, you've got to put the recording implement next to your bed, whether you're going to use a digital recorder or a pad and paper or a journal. You've got to put the access to recording the dream nearby. If you have a dream in the middle of the night or even in the morning and you feel, oh, this is so vivid, I'll never forget it, don't count on it.
Absolutely.
To do your day is much louder than the part of your brain that's remembering the dream. But here's the more important piece. Pick that pad up in the morning, whether you've had a dream or not. This is especially to anybody out there who wishes to have more dream memory and is, you know, maybe not having as much dream memory as you would prefer. Pick up that pad in the morning, even if all you write is, I don't remember any of my dreams from last night. And then wait a moment before you wrap that up just to see if anything comes, and then move about your day. Adding to that, I would also say, set the intention when you go to bed to have more dream memory. Just say it as a prayer or a request. This piece is important. If you think you're going to get the big vivid dream sticking in your memory and that's what's going to send you off into dream work, you may be disappointed. But if you ask and then be ready for the receiving of the answer, that can trigger remembering your dreams more than anything else. But go to that pad in the morning and write something down.
Great.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Michael Lennox, we have had so much fun, and the time went way too fast.
It flies, yeah. Doesn't it? It flies. It does.
Yeah. I feel like we just scratched the surface. So we hope you'll come back again.
Anytime, any subject.
Excellent. We love that. Thank you again for joining us. And everybody, as always, you can listen to our show on our website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. And Michael, where can our listeners find you?
Facebook and Instagram are the best places to find me. On Facebook, it's Dr. Michael Lennox, DrMichaelLennox. And on Instagram, it is Dr. Lennox Dreams, DrLennox Dreams.
Excellent. We'll put both of those in the show notes as well. Carol, anything else before we wrap up?
No, this was just so fun. Thank you again.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much. It was great, and we look forward to chatting with you again. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you soon.